ready to start the
let's
show?
Let's do this.
All right, let's do
is
it.
Is there an intro? Is there a jingle?
Yeah, I got to introduce the show. This has been the sound check. What do you think? I just got started? I've been doing this for a long time. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is an award-winning television and film director, writer, producer on shows like VH1's Storytellers and New Visions. Has even won an Emmy. Is that correct? You won an Emmy for directing a live episode of Survivor?
No, I was nominated.
Nominated for an episode. Okay. Well, so let's give a
look. I do share an Emmy for Home for the Holidays, a yearly show on CBS.
Shared an Emmy.
Shared it. It was an Emmy the show got, so it wasn't specifically.
Did they give
directed.
You your own personal one
yes.
when they share it?
Yes, they did.
But
you can order it, yeah.
You can order it.
Yeah, probably anyone can
extra,
order it,
you have
by
to
the
pay
way.
Extra.
No, the production company paid for it, but I think anybody could actually get an Emmy, maybe even an Oscar if you just say you did something on a show and they
can send it to you. They
can
send it to you.
I'm thinking, maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to piss off the TV Academy.
We're going to check this out.
Don't.
Let's give a lukewarm Philadelphia welcome to Michael Simon. In the next hour, we're going to find out why Michael is doing exactly the same work today as when I last saw him in 1983. And if he thinks he'll ever have the courage to spread his wings and transform into the beautiful unicorn that we know he is. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. That's where you could listen to this. Aside from iTunes, I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is the man who has looked into the heart of darkness, television director Michael Simon.
Wow. You kind of...
That's a big introduction.
That's a big introduction.
You have to live up to that.
I'm parsing it now.
You're parsing it?
Yeah, I'm parsing it.
All right, well, don't parse too hard. I just made up that part about the heart of darkness, but
No, I agree with you. I think I've seen some darker hearts in my business.
Well, that's what I was saying. I mean, I was just thinking that directing live television, you got somebody like Miles Davis is there, or you're with Survivor in the middle of the Philippines.
Well, no, the Survivors were in the middle of studios in New York or L.A. I did the finales.
Okay, did the finales.
You know, yeah.
But still.
I didn't sweat. I did sweat, actually.
Those were like moments,
very stressed,
moments of war.
Yeah.
Those moments, right?
Yes.
The intensity, the focus, the willing to do anything for the shot.
Yeah. Well, it's I would say, and I'll try to make this story brief.
There's no need for that. You're a guest on my show.
I'll make it as long as I want. So I'm doing this live special on CBS late 1999. Sports Illustrated Athletes of the Century from Madison Square Garden.
So I'm just telling you, if you lean on the table and you gesticulate like that, that you're going to make noise.
I shouldn't do that. I should know that.
You should know that.
I should know that. Okay.
So what are you doing?
So anyway, so it's 1999. It's the end of 1999, of last millennium. And I'm doing a special, a live special, three-hour-plus special, called Athletes of the Century. And every conceivable great athlete up to that point was there. And it culminated with Billy Crystal delivering this big 5-minute speech homage to Muhammad Ali, who was Athlete of the Century, with a big, and so we're in the garden again, just setting the scene, and we're live, and we're going along. We're a little over. Madison Square Garden, that one. And, the network let us run over. We went past 11 o'clock in the East, but okay, you can go to whatever. I think we went long because Al Pacino's introduction to Jim Brown as football player of the century went about 9 minutes long, but it was Al Pacino, so I didn't want to wrap him. Anyway, so
Attica,
so we're doing this. So,
Attica, yeah.
So Billy Crystal finally goes, please, after this wonderful, heartfelt speech with, goes, please welcome Sports Illustrated Athlete of the Century, Muhammad Ali. Cut to a Steadicam shot of Ali standing up. He's in the first row with, Michael, every athlete you can think of. Michael Jordan, Hank Aaron, and everyone else who's, of course, not coming into my head right now. Anyway, so he stands up, and I'm on this shot, and you see the whole garden standing, and there are steps going up to the stage. And he walks, and he kind of brushes off. Now, this was 99, so obviously Parkinson's had, affected him somewhat.
Somewhat.
He was, it was not the beginning and it wasn't the end, but it was, he gets up and he kind of brushes off the people who were going to help him. And he walks up and he's on these steps. I mean, I'm on this shot. This is live.
Yeah.
And he teeters. Like, he teeters to his right. And I'm live on the air. And for this half a second, I'm thinking, what the fuck? Can I say?
Yeah.
What the fuck do I do? what the fuck do I do if this guy falls? If this guy, this most iconic human maybe ever on this, you know, show live, whatever, 14 million people are watching and it will be news, or what if he, what am I supposed to do?
There's no railing.
And this is live, and there's no railing, and you know, there's no time for a seminar, and there's no producer and network person, and this literally is going, it's like, you know, something happened on a quantum level and everything just stopped, and I'm like running through these scenarios like, this guy is going down, if he falls, what do I do? So, do I cut to a weird high wide shot? Do I scream to the network to take us to a commercial? Do I tap the camera, go into a fallen Muhammad Ali? Luckily, he got himself back up, and he went up, and he kissed Billy Crystal on both cheeks, and the show went off the air. It's actually, I'm sure you can watch this clip on YouTube.
But for a moment.
But for that moment, and that to me is kind of encapsulated what live is. Live. You know, it's just you kind of out there in an island, and everything is great, and everyone raises their game, and there is no time for mistakes. And if you make a mistake, you just, you know, you just keep going. But, you know, it's that, like, second when just like, oh, you know. And I'm not pushing the buttons, but everyone's listening to me who's pushing some buttons and doing something. So I think that kind of capsulized the moment.
You've done a lot of live stuff.
I have, but, you know, I mean, it's not always, you know, live. It's what they call live to tape, you know, multi-camera where you're doing a cut as you go.
Sure.
But then, of course, it is edited, so it's not really live.
Well, and again, to my introduction, this live cutting multicam stuff, honestly, last time I saw you, really, 1983, like this, we were in this program. This was what we were working on in school.
Yes,
but this exact thing.
But you know, I got a C in TV directing from Dr. Thiel.
A C, why?
Yeah.
She probably gave you a C because she thought you could do better.
I hope I did. I think I've been trying to prove her wrong for 30 some odd. No, why did I get a C? Because I was the first one. I'm sure this is fascinating to your listeners.
It's good for me.
So it was the first. Were you in that class? Were you in the TV, whatever it was, class?
I took the class.
Because I'm older.
You were older.
All right, so I'm in a class, and you had to do an assignment. I was the first. I had to go first. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was like DC. I can't remember remembering this. Because I don't think I remember this until now that we're talking about it. It was called DC Clubland. It was about, you know, running around to punk clubs and did some field piece and had a lot of things where I wanted, like, to do split screens. And the lovely young woman next to me, whose name I remember, and actually I think is in the business, could not do any of the effects. So it was just like a fucking disaster. And I remember afterwards, Dr. Thiel said, "Well, we saw a noble try today." So that's probably why I got to see.
And this was live.
I mean, this was live. Yes, basically it was live.
We were talking about.
Yes,
yeah, so you produce it live, and then you
watch so
it
that later. Was.
So you're still compensating.
I'm still compensating. Yes, one of the things I'm compensating for is a C in TV directing in 1982.
So that was your rosebud moment.
Yes.
And we're still locked in there. That might answer my question. I do have a question here saying, you're doing exactly the same work that you were doing. I mean, this was it. Live television with the headset and the thing. Anyway, you're doing it on a totally different scale.
Yes.
But it's basically the same work that you were doing.
Yes, that aspect is...
In our program.
You're skipping over the whole radio station.
Well, we're going to get to
that. Okay, I didn't know what you were going to get to. I didn't know how much time.
What else? We had this program. We were there at George Washington University. What else do you remember about that program?
Oh, radio, I thought you can say about college.
Well, radio and TV. That was our...
Radio, TV.
Do you think we got a good education?
I do, because I when I talk about college, you know, GW had a lot of visiting professors. I took some wacky courses. The guy who wrote probably the anthropological study called The Forest People, Colin Turnbull, professor who wrote that book, offered a class. I decided to take it. I didn't take any anthropology, called In Search of Meaning. And I did a paper on punk rock, and he loved it. And it was fantastic. And there were, you know, so yeah, and I took a philosophy class with Thelma Levine, who was the leading Hegelian of... I think it was a very good education. Yeah. And, you know, there was the radio station, and there was getting laid. So there was a lot of...
lot to do.
A lot to do. Yeah.
The thing that I remember and tell people about our program was that in whenever it was, 83, my first production was on black and white reel-to-reel video.
Oh, yeah.
That's all we had.
Yeah, we had a field camera, I think, was in color.
Camera and, reel-to-reel black and white videotape. And my first production, I figured out, because the way you had to edit was that you did a manual pre-roll and then...
And you just guessed the time,
just
right?
Punch the button.
You just hoped it...
You turned,
2-1, right?
Exactly.
And it was really hard to, if you erased it, you had to get... you had to go further.
You put the last shot in again.
Because the last... But you couldn't just do that. I don't think anybody under the age of 40 has any idea what we're talking about.
One of those machines, I noticed that there was a button. And I, said, what do these do? And it was a slow motion. It slowed things down. So in my final thing, I had slow motion sequences. And, I showed the class, and people said, how the hell did you... Where did you get these? And Dr. Thiel... Our professor, she just loved that. She just smiled knowingly. And said,
right, because rather than showing the button to the class, it was to discover.
Well, I discovered it.
And you did.
Nobody else had any.
No, I don't know if we even had that option, but I do remember editing this piece or a couple pieces there and the frustration of. But, that when I started VH1 in the 80s, late 80s, and we would do everything. And I would edit on a 3/4 offline system, which was a little better.
Yeah.
Before, and then of course it became what it became. But
well, you at least had an automatic pre-roll in that.
Yes, you had automatic pre-roll.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you missed it, you didn't have to just get really frustrated and want to go to the exchange and have a drink and
Well, that happens a lot. I totally want to talk about this radio station. We had a radio station. You were there before me. WRGW.
WRGW. 5:40 a.m.
5:40 a.m.
The voice of the George Washington University.
That's right.
I have a T-shirt which says that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty strident voice, an angry voice at some moments. But it was the voice of George Washington University.
Well, I'll tell you my story with that. If again, I don't know.
Yeah, that's why you're here.
Okay, good. So I, as a freshman at George Washington, nowadays, just having a kid in college, the process is it's all wacky. And, back then I got into this school, I'll go to that school. And there wasn't a lot of thought behind it. Anyway, so I went to the school and I wasn't all that happy my beginning of my freshman year in Thurston Hall. I don't know why. But I wandered over to the radio station. And this was just when I was starting to get into punk. And I met a bunch of people. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And I found out, lo and behold, if you're going to volunteer to do an old volunteer thing and you stay volunteer, they keep on wanting you to do more stuff.
Yeah.
So I somehow became... I did a show. They taught me the equipment. And sophomore year, they made me music director. At the end of sophomore year, the outgoing station manager said... the guy who's above you, the program director, is in line to do my job, but I think you should do it. I go, okay. It paid my tuition for 2 years, full tuition.
Yeah.
I got full tuition stipend for two fucking years. My parents still owe me.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, really.
Sure. Dad, if you're listening.
If you're listening.
Okay.
Send it over. So when you got there, what was happening?
So what was happening?
What year did you get there?
79. I got there in the fall of 79.
Yeah.
So
musically, what were they playing?
So musically, it was a mix. There was definitely some. It was almost all rock. Obviously, it was almost all rock. Rap didn't exist. But it was album oriented rock with some punk new waves starting to seep in into their rotations.
Yeah.
And some local groups. Remember the Slicky Boys?
Yep.
Okay. So. And the Bad Brains?
Bad Brains
okay.
are awesome.
Yeah. I wore, I was just in Del Mar. We took a beach house, my wife and my son. I had a Bad Brains T-shirt, and two guys said, great band.
Yeah.
So then there may be a whole Bad Brains thing happening in Del Mar.
To say, a plug for the Bad Brains, there's that song, Something Love, not Tainted Love, but Some Kind of Love, where HR, the vocalist, is in jail. and he phones the lyrics in over the phone, and they recorded and they his.
We should play it now. Are you editing this?
I edited it afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll put a clip of it.
You should put a bad
brand. Whatever that song is.
Or pay to come.
Yeah,
so anyway, so Bad Brains. Anyway, so there was that was kind of seeping into the playlist, and that was where my head was at. You know,
you were a big David Bowie fan.
I was a big David Bowie fan. You know, I went in high school from like a prog rock, you know, kid, and like, you know, Pink Floyd or, you know,
yes,
you know,
not quite
and then kind of segued into the Dead for a while, and then discovered Bowie, and then discovered the Clash, and then cut my hair, you know, and like, oh shit, look, they're my age,
like,
and they're angry,
deadhead guy.
You know, and I hate hippies. This is great. So that was starting to come in, and by the time I was a sophomore and music director, I made it like almost all newer music.
Yeah,
you
punk
know,
and new wave.
Yeah, punk and new wave.
I mean, it's D.C. in the early 80s. Yeah. That
by the way, we had no – WRGW had an illegal 10-watt antenna broadcasting.
Illegal, yeah.
And carrier current, which going to the dorms and, like, the student center and all that stuff. So when I was a junior, my first thing is I got to get us heard by someone, at least in theory. So that's what I did for the first week as station manager, and then made it – and then brought in, like, any punk on campus, I come work here. You know, any new wave person, some of whom have gone on to become luminaries.
Like who?
Like Mark Cates and Steve Blush. Maybe just those two, but there are probably others.
Okay.
but it became sort of a community, and we really, you know, pushed that. And, you know, we did interviews from, you know, I still have a picture of me interviewing Black Flag in the radio station it went punk and new wave.
Any other good guests we had in the
I'm sure, but those are the ones I remember mostly.
Yeah,
because I don't think I did a lot of interviews, but I insisted on doing that one, and I interrupted a basketball game. the Colonials were playing Duquesne or somebody, and Adam, I can't believe I'm remembering
this. I remember Adam.
Adam, the sports guy,
yeah. Yeah, the sports guy, yeah, I remember.
Who I don't know what he's doing, but he was broadcasting the games from the Smith Center, yeah. And we interrupt him for a Black Flag interview. And he got really upset. And he's probably right, but I'm like, you know, fuck it.
You know, you got like that.
And, oh, another story now, which is coming back
to
me. We had a business manager. I don't know why I hide this guy. Oh, the guy who eventually, Dave Rubin, who sadly took his own life. But yeah. Dave Rubin, who was became a big promoter in D.C. and did a great job, like, bringing this whole funk scene to
punk
the foreground.
Funk. They had a bunch of punk funk shows.
Punk funk shows, which
Bad
is old
Brains,
Dave Rubin,
Minor
yeah.
Threat.
Yeah, but with, like, funk. Trouble Funk and yeah. and can't remember the other Chuck Brown, the Soul Searchers, really good shit.
Yeah.
And anyway, so he became businessman. But before that, I first got hired. I don't know why. This guy named, I don't know if I should say this. Let's just call him BP.
Okay. Yeah, what's right.
So BP was a very uptight, like, conservative guy. But I think he can sell because we could sell ad space.
Yeah. Because we got no money.
Because we had no money. So go, to whatever this, the
sandwich
place.
Place. Yeah. Yeah.
And they'll give us like $800, which will pay for
a lot of weed.
A lot of weed and Byron. It's not a sponge. The weed was given to me. Anyway, it actually wasn't really weed.
So you had the business.
Bruce Peters, okay.
BP,
I'm up in my office, which is like the third floor, and he comes up, and he was a very tense guy, but we're like jacket and ties, and not in an early 80s new wave sense, like in a mid 50s,
yeah.
madman sense.
Yeah.
And he goes, and he's talking to like the military. And I go, you can't let them advertise on our air, And he freaks out and like he almost attacked me, like physically.
Because you were anti military, or he finally sold something.
He
finally sold something. Be
exactly.
All you can be, and you were
now,
like,
in retrospect, fuck it, I should have taken that money. But, I was making my, it was the Reagan era, And,
yeah, sure.
As opposed to the fine government we have now. So, so those were kind of some of the antics. But my show was called Going Underground. Do you remember my last show ever?
I don't.
I have it, I still have it on cassette
tape.
Yeah,
tell me, what happened?
Nothing. I played my top 40 ever.
All right.
And with a bunch of people in the studio.
What's in your top 40 ever?
Well, I remember one was Complete Control by The Clash. Number two, and it wasn't really my top 40 ever, it was my top 40 from like the last 2.5 years at that point in my life.
At that moment.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was like there's a Wire song, Reuters. There was a Jam song, Down in the Tube Station at Midnight.
It's a great song.
Bad Brains, Pay to Come, Minor Threat, Dead Kennedys, Holiday in Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there was something with Melody, which wasn't just... But I can't. I have a list somewhere.
Yeah. The Stranglers? Yeah. Did you like The Stranglers?
Yes, I love The Stranglers.
I like them.
Do you know I saw The Buzzcocks?
You did.
I invited you. You had a date.
I had a date.
How was the date?
Date was good.
Really?
Yeah.
Is she listening? Do you think in late August she'll still be dating?
She might still be around.
Are you dating her now?
Yeah, I'm dating her now.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So,
So I was going to say, because you blew off a really good show.
I know.
And my son, who I took, my 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun for
him. It was like not maybe a first date. It was kind of like a second date. I couldn't just cancel and say, hey, I'm going to...
Well, I had two extra tickets. You could have brought her.
Yeah.
Was she not into it?
Not. That's not her speed.
What's her speed?
It's not the Buzzcocks.
Really?
No.
Is she much younger than you?
No.
Okay.
Classical music. She was not a punk.
Do you think I would like her?
Maybe.
Okay. What about your listeners in general? Are you going to bring her on?
I don't know.
Should we not talk about her anymore? You can edit this out.
I'm going to edit this out. that moment. No, this is a historical question. That moment of time, place, and music. Washington, D.C. in the early 80s. That was a special... It was something
very,
happened.
Very special
something
place.
Happened and was there.
Yeah, I got this book sent to me by someone.
Yeah.
I don't know who. Called Banned in D.C., and it was about D.C.'s punk scene, hardcore punk scene in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And it was great. And, I remember him. And, yeah, it was, there was the original, however you define punk, and obviously there are antecedents which go back to whenever. But, from vintage English punk and vintage New York punk, so mid-70s, late 70s, but then there was this – second explosion of punk. I'm probably simplifying, but you know, and DC had a real vibrant scene, a really amazing scene, and
it
was homegrown.
Changed.
It was hardcore.
It changed. Hardcore,
and hard edge and straight edge.
Yeah,
you know.
I was
you know,
kind of the straight edge guy during that time. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink. I didn't do any drugs. It was just I couldn't deal, so I was super straight.
I'm
just saying.
Didn't keep to that ethos. I respected that ethos,
but I didn't keep
to that ethos. I found, you know, I don't know. It, you know, we were young, but it definitely had a violent undertone.
Yeah,
and I think there were real thugs in it, but I think there were real visionaries in it. And I think when you look at like Ian MacKaye, who you know was Minor Threat and Fugazi, and now what is his label, his famous label, which is to this day
I forget
out there, but that label, that music label, yep. Which he is, I think they've kept going 30-40 years.
It's not
now
SST, right?
No,
it's the other, yeah, anyway,
Discord. You know, that's pretty amazing. You know, that's a real testimony to and then Henry Rollins, who of course became lead singer
from the area,
who I went to summer camp with.
Yeah, a friend of mine went to elementary school with Henry.
Yeah, we went to summer camp in Maine together when we were both 12 or 13. And I remember during those days, I said, do you remember from Camp Wakila? And I remember him looking at me and going, yeah, you were the guy almost as weird as me. I was saying, I don't think it was that weird when I was 13, but perhaps.
Maybe didn't think you were. But
maybe
he,
I didn't.
He saw
the weirdness in me.
He saw
which,
common.
So,
soul.
But it was exciting, and it was energetic, and it was dangerous. You know.
Yeah. Well, that I was there. I also walked in when I was 19, my sophomore year. I was dating Naomi, who you know.
Yes.
And she had stepped in there, and she pulled me in. And
she pulled you in. Okay.
She pulled me into the radio station, and I just got behind, not being the DJ, but I got in the production studio, and I just wanted to turn everything on and record things and mess around with stuff, and yeah, it was perfect.
You know, my daughter, who goes to the University of Puget Sound up in Washington, and who's director of alternative music, give her a plug, but we did a show last February. When I went up there to see her, and we did a punk show, and we played a lot of old stuff and a lot of new stuff, and it was great. But yeah, of course it's different now because you just drag the song onto the, you know. But there's a real energy to that music, which clearly has survived to this day because one of the best films I've seen recently, and I would say recently, I mean in like a decade, Baby Driver. I think is brilliant for many reasons, but the music is. Have you seen it?
Not yet.
Okay, we'll see it, and everyone should see it. It's the best soundtrack ever. He's absolute genius, but the songs propel the story. But anyway, "Neat, Neat, Neat" by the Damned, one of the best punk songs ever.
Yeah.
Just pure, like you know, pure joy. The song. There was a scene from it, and it was just you know a scene which he used it. But it wasn't, again, like where they play a song and have a montage. The scene, and I won't remember what the scene was, and it was just so good. And like, and you just hear these songs, like the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, where the you know Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division. So these songs are like in everything, clearly not designed for 50-year-olds, these. And it, so it's kind of, must be something about that music that has stuck around. You know, because it never sold a lot. You know, there's some new wave stuff which did, but none of that, you know, edgy punk stuff.
Hardcore, no, that didn't sell for
it. Never sold.
No. But there were little pockets, New York, San Francisco.
Yeah. But now
LA,
those pockets,
DC,
you know.
Yeah. Detroit, so, yeah. Anyway, I thought it was a great moment for me. I mean, you get to college, you're learning about stuff. Yeah, this was exploding. And I still listen. The Jam is probably my favorite band from that time. Yeah, that's probably still my favorite.
Yeah.
I also liked the Gang of Four.
Love the Gang of Four.
But the Jam has stood the test of time better.
Did you see the documentary done on them about a year and a half ago?
No.
My wife will tell you.
The Jam or just Paul Weller?
No, the Jam.
Okay.
But there's not a punk documentary I have not made her watch. That was her favorite.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's it called? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
I'm going to check it out. I wanted to ask a couple other questions about your work right now. right? You've been directing live music, game shows, talk shows, reality TV. Crashleets. What's that show? You're 40 episodes deep in the show?
I do a lot. I'm doing a lot of stage shows now, series. And what they're great about is we shoot like 10, 15 episodes in a short period time, because I'm developing actually stuff outside of this world, stuff in the feature, which I'm sure we'll get into. But actually, the series I do now, which will probably be best known to your audience, is Ridiculousness on MTV.
I've never seen that show.
You've never seen it? Well, you're the one.
75 episodes.
Ridiculousness, where next week, so by the time this airs, we'll have just completed our 10th season.
Okay.
But they air them continuously.
Yeah.
They air the repeats. It's the simplest show in the world. It's a viral, internet viral. It's America's funniest videos for the internet generation.
Okay.
And it's hosted by a comic and all-around genius, Rob Dyrdek, who came to the world as a skateboard and did a bunch of shows. And he's and I do a lot of work with his company. They're super jacked. They're amazing. They're amazing people. They're funny. They're great. And it's just been great. And we're like an efficient machine. We go in, we shoot the show. It's hysterically funny. It airs. It does, you know.
Is it like America's Funniest Home Videos? He's Bob Saget. Does it have a live audience?
It has a live audience. Yeah, it's like that.
And you just show the videos. He comments.
No, there's a panel, and it's part talk show, part, right. And he's actually hosting a new series for MTV, which I'm going to start shooting the end of August, which is a game show, it won't feel like Ridiculousness, but it'll have Rob's energy.
Okay.
And there's another, it's funny because doing all these things on MTV, but a series now on MTV called Safe Word, which is sort of a comedy thing. And then a Crashleets, which was a kid's version of Ridiculousness.
Okay.
Which we did two seasons of, and I hope there may be a third season, but I don't want to talk out of school.
Is that a competition show, Crashleets?
No, it's a similar to Ridiculousness.
Similar comedy
it's
show.
It's always, they're more gay. They're like sight gags because it's Nickelodeon, but they're funny sports clips.
Got it.
So it's like Sports Center meets Ridiculousness.
Okay.
So those that's a whole thing I just kind of stepped into. And then I do a lot of one-off specials. I just did a Netflix special with Jeff Dunham, the comedian, and I'm doing another one for them. Another Netflix one-off November. I did a music special, a Mother's Day concert thing. I'm going to do a yearly concert special for CBS and around the holidays and other things that they come up. I don't do as much music as I used to, but, things change. So that's kind of my bread and butter.
And you can say, so now you have a feature film.
I've been developing because you can't get away being in Hollywood without saying you're developing. So I decided to develop. And I guess I'm fortunate because I'm not worrying about my mortgage payment, so I can develop without the stress of if I don't sell this. But that said, I have two features. They've both been in various stages of development for 4 years now, which I'm told is kind of the midlife of a gestation period. But it's hard because and they're both very different. But, crossing over in Hollywood, if you're known for this, you can't do that. So,
which I do not understand.
Nobody understands it, but I guess it's human nature.
It is human nature.
If somebody wants the best knee surgeon, they hire a knee surgeon, not the hip surgeon. So for me to do hip surgery, I have to just do a hip surgery somewhere. Yeah. All right, that analogy kind of fell. But
fell down. That's actually funny. That's how you break your hip or your knee.
Right.
So no, but it's true here. If you're an actor and you say you've written something, nobody wants to. Nobody cares. Or even the other way around. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
You have to really.
Nobody cares. I mean, the thing about today is, if you're 23, if we were that age now, we'd be doing shooting on our iPhone and editing, and doing all that. But I don't want to do that. I want a budget. So.
All right. Here's some other questions. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
I never ran away. I did play hooky in eighth grade, I think. Eighth grade with Bruce Pizetzner. We walked to the bus, and then we ran down Skank Avenue, and we played hooky and sort of got back at 2:30. But then I heard everyone knew what we did, except my parents. So that wasn't really running away.
Did you get away with it playing hooky?
We did. I got away to this moment. I'm revealing myself.
And what did you guys do all day?
Well, we I don't know what we did in the morning, because I think we were trying to avoid, you know, because
as if the cops were out looking
for us. I'm pretty sure we had lunch at like Frederick's. What do they call it back then?
This is in Great Neck.
This is in Great Neck, Long Island. I think we had lunch. Probably went to Allenwood Park and did what you did in Allenwood Park, which was throw a ball around.
I mean, this is eighth grade.
This was eighth grade, yeah. This was on the cusp between. And I think a lot of times thinking we like, oh, we have to be sneaky. Like, where do we go? And I think we snuck back maybe to his house, which, by the way, his house in Great Neck was right near what they used to call the hippie house. In fact, it was Bloister Cult where they lived.
Yeah. You didn't know that.
I didn't know. Bloister Cult was in 1975.
All right. So you never really ran away from home.
No.
You had a happy childhood? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there was moments. Insecurity and self-doubt and, you know, bitterness and anger. But, yeah, for the most part.
That's all.
I was happy.
Okay. That's the way we like it.
I mean, you know.
As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
Yes. I did. I had many. I'm trying to think of. I had a whole fucking imaginary life. I mean, I was playing. I had a puff basketball, which was rim, in my small, and I say small, I mean I had a small room in our house in Great Neck. And I had a puff basketball, and I would wear my underpants and those old undershirts, what are they called?
Sleeveless kind.
So you look like, what are wife beaters?
Lou Alcindor. I don't like calling them wife
beaters. But that's what they're called, right?
Yeah, but...
But it's a horrible name. Okay.
It's a horrible
anyway,
name.
Anyway, so... I wasn't Lou Alcindor. I was a Nick.
Oh, right.
And I always thought I wanted to be Walt Frazier, but I was... Yeah, I would project, so this was like... I was probably nine, so this was like 1970. So I was projecting myself to be, you know, older, and I had an imaginary team around me as I would get the ball and make the layup in game 7 to win. But I had a whole imaginary team.
Two teams.
Names. I didn't really have opponents. I just had my team. Yeah.
But they all
and I had a coach.
They had names?
I had a coach who was still the same coach as Nick, but he was old. So I remember him, like, I would sit down on my bed and, like, pretending that, like, hearing this coach
me. He was
giving
you a pep talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess a lot of imaginary girlfriends.
I guess. So the coach of your team, do you remember the names of any of the other players?
There was a Pete.
Pete.
There was a Pete.
Okay.
And Pete was my backcourt mate. I was the point guard. Like Pistol Pete.
Yeah.
And he was the shooting guard.
Got it.
And I remember thinking they were comparing us to the great backcourts of the time, like, you know, Walt Frazier and Earl Monroe. So, yeah, I remember Pete was a...
Wow. All right, so he was the shooting guard, and you're the one that drove down to the
basket. I was drove down, yeah.
So you were Walt Frazier, and he was...
I was Walt Frazier.
And he was Earl the
and
Pearl.
And he was Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Earl the
Pearl. I didn't think... I thought you were from Philly.
I am from Philly.
Oh. But, so it would be like Hal Greer and...
Everybody knows Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Do we have an older audience, by the way? Are these references?
They're like, what the hell are you talking about?
Like, millennials kind of like, Google them.
In the 70s, yeah. This coach, you had a coach who was the same name as the guy?
Yeah, as Red Holtzman, yeah.
But
he was Red.
Your coach was much older.
I think he was Red, but like much older.
Okay.
You know?
So he was like a future.
Yeah, it was a futuristic, like, you know.
Yeah, okay. Now, here's a question I'd like to ask anybody. I think that most human beings have some kind of a superpower. And by that, I mean some energy or quality that just wants to come through you. And you just get out of the way and let it enter the world. You know, like you're not trying, you're not working hard, it just wants to come out. Do you know what that is for you?
See, I always imagine that a advanced civilization would come here and pick me to take away and give all the knowledge they would have. And let's say their intelligence, if they were able to come here, would make humans seem like, you know, amoeba to us. And that I would have all this knowledge and all this power and come back and then kind of, you know, be So it's, and then
the supreme ruler of Earth.
Well, I would be the supreme ruler of Earth, but I'd be a very good one, and it wouldn't be about like my power, you know. It would be about, though I would have some people, you know, I'd talk to some people in government.
Yeah.
So that I felt it was like sort of a godlike power, but not actually a godlike power because I don't believe God exists. So this would be a civilization.
So in this story, a superior.
By the way, this isn't something I thought as a kid. This is something I routinely think about
now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a superior alien intelligence
come here.
Comes to Earth.
They pick me.
They take you.
They take me.
They bring you.
They bring me. They buzz me around for, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months.
They
tell everyone.
They give you all of their.
They give me all of their stuff, all of their knowledge, all of their
technology,
all of their protection, all of their strength, all of their everything.
Okay.
They deposit me back with like a big fanfare.
Okay. Ticker tape parade.
I don't know if I would do that. I would have a big. Like every, you know, I would be interviewed by a panel of people I like, maybe you, but others. And I would just discuss shit and tell people shit and say, here's what I think we need to do going forward. Right. Here's who I think we need to, like, stop listening to. Mm-hmm. And by the way, you can't fuck me. Oh, and I would also have the ability to instantly protect 100,000 people, and I could randomly just choose. So if everyone tried to get to, like, anyone I knew, like, you know, well, we can't get to me, but we can get to one of Michael's friends, I would just know it instantly because right. I could also read their thoughts right. way ahead, and they would be inoculated against anything.
Or like populations at risk, refugees streaming across the border.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could protect them.
Yes.
So
children dying in Darfur, you could protect them, that kind of
yes.
stuff. That's what you want this power for.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so there's definitely no question, if you get this power, you're going to use this power for good.
No question.
And not evil.
No question I would use it for good.
Okay.
Now, I think part of good is pointing out evil.
Absolutely.
And I would certainly point that out.
Yeah. With relish. you have a somewhat quirky bedtime or sleeping ritual. What is it?
Wow. I'm not sure I do. I think my quirky sleep is if someone said, Michael, go to sleep at any time, any place, I can go to sleep instantly.
You can go to sleep.
I can. Someone says go to sleep. Okay. Just show me a comfortable place and I'll go to sleep. 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But 5 minutes.
You can go down.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's probably a professional skill.
I don't know what it is.
Develop that like on set or someplace?
Yeah, I've always liked naps. And but does that qualify? Is that in the answer?
Not necessarily quirky or
well, that's pretty quirky.
I say somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime. You can fall asleep at will. Can people make you fall asleep? Like if you have a producer who wants to get you out of the way, can they say, Michael, go to sleep?
No,
you'll just come out?
I have to want to.
Okay,
and I have to be given the opportunity to.
Okay,
yeah.
So, but it's not.
But if someone said, hey, you know, you're going to get all those powers from the civilization.
Yeah,
just go to sleep within 10 minutes, I would go to sleep within 10 minutes.
And that's as weird as it gets. You can go to sleep.
Yeah.
Noisy places.
I mean, it has to be comfortable. I couldn't sleep on metal.
Oh, well, now it's getting less quirky as you talk about it.
That's true. But, you know,
now it's just a
but I'm a director. I'm usually, I usually have access to at least a couch.
Maybe as your wife, how long have you been married?
25 years in October.
And she has never complained or said that?
She's complained often.
In your sleep, you do
I
say?
I snore.
You snore.
Badly. Mm-hmm. But I have a thing I wear. But it hurts. I don't know how much I need to go into this, but.
All right, that's getting a little weird. You have a thing you wear, it hurts. That probably doesn't help your snoring. It just makes your wife happy.
It does make her happy.
That it hurts and you have to do it. All right, I have this other thing. In the mid-90s, I was at home in my apartment in San Francisco, or Oakland, actually. And I was asking myself, what could I really do as a single person, little guy in the universe, to help make the world a better place, to spread some love and joy and happiness, honestly? And I got a message from an unknown source, the ether, and it said you could give permission to your family and friends to hit you in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime. So I did this. I went back and I wrote a letter to my friends and family saying you could hit me in the face with a pie anytime without warning. And I mailed it to like 30 people. And I waited. And eventually, you know, somebody hit me in the face with a pie. And so since the mid to late 90s, I've been hit in the face with pies many times. And the thing is, you might want to hit somebody in the face with a pie, Donald Trump or, you know, Anita Bryant or something. But it's usually some act of aggression, and it's not a nice thing. But I'm going to change that. I say, look, I'm going to receive this pie with love and affection because it's from you. You're going to throw it with love and generosity, and it changes the whole thing. So here's the question. You're going to do
this. Wait. I got a question.
You got a question.
So if somebody interrupted a meeting you were having, a business meeting, hit you with a pie, mm-hmm. you'd be okay with it?
If it's somebody that I've given permission to, like a friend or family member, I guess.
You know. Suppose somebody, you were in your living room with your girlfriend and you were making out with her and someone came in and hit you with a pie. Be okay?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But here's the question for you. You're going to give permission to one person to hit you in the face with a pie. But it can be anybody you want, living, dead, real, imaginary, history, present day. You're going to get hit in the face with a pie by anyone you choose. And it's going to be all generous and love. Who would you like to have throw that pie?
Now, is the interaction with this person just the pie in the face, or is there a preamble and a postscript?
Have as much preamble and postscript as you'd like.
Well, I mean, then I would just pick somebody I'd want to, like, really meet. So it would be Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
He's going to hit you in the face with a pie.
Yeah, and then we're going to talk.
Yeah.
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 Absolutely.
What do you think? What do you imagine in this moment, or how is this going to be? What's going to happen for you guys?
I think now am I surprised by this? Like, am I imagining he does this like out of the blue, or is this like next Thursday he's going to reincarnate and hit me with a pie?
I think you get to have your preference. I mean, you're going to give him permission.
Okay,
he's going to know.
I would like him then not to know. And
he's got to know because he's going to hit you in the face.
He will know.
Yeah.
But I would like not to have this as an appointment. I just know in theory, okay, we can change the law of physics enough to have him come back to life, and I guess he would be a good person to do that.
Yeah.
Hit me in a pie, and I think I think he would hit me with a pie. I would know it was him, and I would cry because I would be so amazed that now I can get the pie out of my eyes, and I can talk to Albert Einstein.
Sounds like a big moment for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I like that you want to be surprised by him. You don't want to know that it's coming.
No, I don't want to know it's coming.
Yeah. All right, Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
I like that.
Who would you choose?
I keep changing because I ask this question a lot. I keep changing, but Malcolm X has always been a personal hero for me, mostly because he changed so much from the phases of his life when he was a gangster on the street to being a ballroom, you know, zoot suit wearing guy. And anyway, he changed. Anyway, I would like to get hit in the face with Malcolm X. That's what it is for me. There could be other people, too. Anyway, the last thing I like to do on this show is to anagram things, right, where you take the words, the letters of something, and you rearrange them and spell
something.
Yeah,
I'm horrible at these games.
No, I already did some.
Oh, good, because
I already did
some. You can just humiliate me on...
No. But so sometimes hidden meanings are revealed when you just rearrange the letters, like this one. I know we didn't talk a lot about you have this show called Crashlytes,
right?
I anagrammed it. One of the things is this. Read that.
Reset Clash.
Reset Clash. So is there any connection, or do you see some hidden meanings or revealed meanings in Crashlytes anagrams to resets? Reset Crash. Clash. Reset Clash. Does that make any sense in any way?
Well, I mean, anytime I see Clash, I think of the Clash, but...
Yeah, that's amazing.
No.
No. All right, we're going to move on.
I wanted to do that.
Oh, you can do it next. There you go. Here's another one.
Oh, we're going to keep going? I've looked at all three of them. None of them.
Read that one.
Laser Tex.
Yeah, Laser
Tex. No, Laser Tex.
laser yeah. technology, laser tech. You got any laser?
We have lights on the set, which are called Sharpies, which is a thin laser, which makes the light visible. So yeah, that
laser tech is
laser
part
techs,
of
and there's that. A there's not. They're not really called laser techs, but yes, it's, yeah.
All right, but with that one we made
that one,
make sense somehow, but it wasn't. How about
this? Sales Wretch. No.
Sales Wretch.
No? Sales Wretch.
Is this a successful show? They're
Sales
sell
Wretch.
All their salespeople like it?
Sales Wretch.
Yeah.
Blech. No, it's, no, not in terms of its relation to Crash Lights.
But what do you get about Sales Wretch?
Well, because when I think of Sales Wretch, I think of executives, like salespeople.
Yeah.
Who, you know, are, you know, if you do anything creative, you instantly think everyone who does, you know, who's in the executives is evil and terrible and wants to destroy not only you, but destroy your soul and, you know,
they teach
you ruin
that in
everything
school. Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like the lowest, you know, thing possible and that they spend all their time, you know, in fact, they're selling the shit so... You could be, you know.
So you had a production budget.
But it makes it actually much better being a director if you have that opinion of them existentially, but then know somewhere that they're, you know,
they're
actually
doing,
people doing a job every day.
Doing a good
day.
Job for you. All right. Well, here's the next thing. Because we have this shared history in Washington, D.C., I anagram that. I got two things. One is this sandwich tong.
Sandwich tongue, Washington, D.C., and I was just in Washington,
sandwich
D.C.
Tongue.
Sandwich tongue.
I don't know, T-O-N-G. Like, you know, I have toast tongs, but, yeah.
Sandwich tongue. You know, this is a tangent.
They're all
but
tangents.
I was just in D.C. visiting my daughter, who's interning there this summer. And she lives with she's staying at my nephew's house, and he lives up by American. But there's this whole, and we stay at the Omni Shurum Hotel, right near the zoo, and like that whole area, which we didn't, you know, there's that whole section of D.C. I never walked around.
It's
like I think near where Obama lives.
Yeah, it's grown.
It's really grown. You know, not like the mall, and not certainly.
Is there like
where,
a sandwich connection here?
Well, yes, because there's a lot of food. My thing was thinking
of
food,
okay.
And D.C. is really. Amped its food up. Okay. Not that I had any money when we went to college to have it eat at a nice restaurant, but I didn't even know they existed, and a lot of them exist.
That was tangential. You even forgot what you were doing
that. Sandwich tongue.
And here's the other one for Washington, D.C.
Watch Don Sing.
Watch Don Sing. Isn't that what we're doing right now with the president?
Yes.
Watching him?
We're watching him...
Sing, in a way.
Sing. We're watching him... It's performance art, but it's performance art combined with... Like everything evil we've ever known. So, yes, there is that. Yeah, so that.
Watch Don Sing. Yeah. No, it is like performance art.
Yeah.
It's like a
like
camera.
Bad. Like you would still be. Camera. It's bad performance art. The way everything this man does is bad, but.
Yeah, unbelievable. Watch Don Sing.
Watch Don Sing.
All right, we got a couple more things. I'm not sure if these two made any sense. I anagrammed your name, Michael Simon. I got this one.
Oh, chamomile.
Chamomile scent.
Well, my
it's not a very strong
wife
scent.
Is a huge drinker of tea. Mm-hmm. We have just rooms in our house just dedicated to tea with bags of tea, and we have people outside in the field. No, we don't really have that, but she's a big tea fan. And chamomile is a tea we often get at the end of a meal because there's no caffeine. Mm-hmm. So to me, chamomile sin means clearly my beloved wife is a sinner. No, I don't think it means that. But that's what chamomile tea, I think of.
Chamomile.
Sin. I don't need the sin, but.
Maybe if you put whiskey in it, that kind of.
Yeah. Are you a tea drinker? Does your girlfriend, if you're still with her by the time this airs, drink tea?
She had some green tea just the other night. Yeah.
Did she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jasmine green tea.
Okay. I'm not sure I'd like her.
I'm not sure you'd like her. I'm not sure she'd like you.
Really?
Well.
Do you think she would? It depends. If I did the abrasive thing.
Wait, you're not doing the abrasive
no.
thing?
No.
This is the nice Michael? Oh, Jesus. All right, here's the last one.
Mini cam holes.
Yeah, I thought as a television director.
Yeah, that.
Mini cam holes.
Yeah.
What comes up there?
What comes up there is there's new POV cameras we use, and they're not GoPros. They're Cinema Magic cameras, and they're a little bigger than GoPros, but they're full chip, 4K, if you want them that way. Interesting variety of lenses, but I think of the, I still think of them as mini cams, because you know you can put them somewhere. And so that's the holes. Well, I mean they have a hole, so.
All right, but, so nothing.
Well, yeah, I just want to try something. Can we get back? Okay.
Yeah.
So, what do you think when you hear Clash Tex Retch Tong Sing Sin Holes? The Clash had Tex who retched when the Tong singed the Sin. Sorry, I tried something. It didn't work.
I like that you said you were going to ask me something, then you just went ahead and did it yourself. That's the Michael I know. Okay, now one of these last two is going to work. Michael A. Simon. What's your middle name?
Alan.
Alan. That's what I thought. I anagrammed that too because I didn't get anything great out of Michael Simon. But if you took this too, Alien Machismo.
Ah.
Now we're back to your.
But why did you read it that way? Because it's written Machismo Alien.
But I meant to switch it around. It doesn't matter.
Better Machismo Alien.
Well, what is that for you, Machismo Alien?
Machismo Alien. That to me sounds. It sounds like a modern alt band.
A modern.
Yeah, who would play the third stage in the afternoon at Coachella?
Machismo Alien.
Yeah, Machismo Alien, and have that sort of
what everyone's.
You know, these kind of bands who have kind of that. You know, that kind of ironic about being ironic sound to them. And
Post-modern,
ironic. Yeah, that's exactly what Machismo Alien. Oh, Machismo Alien, they're good. You know, they're kind of like Death Cab for Cutie, but 10 years later, and, yeah, that's what.
All right.
And now Ammonia Chisel.
I didn't know what that meant.
I don't know that, but Machismo Alien, I think if it's not a band, we should.
Yeah.
Should be a band.
Well, when I saw it now, I did switch it around and said Alien Machismo. I went back to your fantasy of being abducted by the aliens, and then they give you all their knowledge, and when you come back, then you can be. I'm interested that you don't want to actually be the ruler of the world.
Just
want to inform everybody about how to do things, and then you're going to go back to life.
There's a great myth about me amongst the 11 people who know me that I somehow crave power. I don't.
You somehow what?
Crave power. I don't crave power. I like. What I crave is dialect and discussion about things I find interesting and I find important. And which I think are important to everything going forward. For instance, casual conversation about trivia and celebrities, I think, should be, by decree, reduced by 50%. Conversation about quantum physics, by decree, should be increased by 25%.
Well, it's a small base, so even if you increased it by 25%, it would still be...
You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah. I like that you're not banning things. You're just
not banning things at all.
You're just decreasing them and trying to rebalance.
Just rebalance.
Rebalance.
That's what I'm trying to do.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to thank my very special guest, the highly successful director, but we're so glad it hasn't gone to his head, Michael Simon, for coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you had a cup of water there. You didn't even drink it. Email me.
I didn't think you wanted me to bring it onto the nice padded table the mic is on, so I left it over there.
As a director, is that what you tell your people, that they're not allowed to bring the stuff close to the equipment?
Other people can do that.
Yeah.
I don't really need to do that.
But that's their job, and they do that.
I think it's kind of known.
Okay. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Thank you, Michael.